Today we're going to kind of talk about the American Civil War issue. What was the big thing about the American Civil War? What was it? It was about slavery.
Votes.
Now, it's more complicated than just simply slavery. It was states' rights. That's the way the South always looks at it.
Voting.
What's that?
Voting.
Voting was also involved in it. Well, not so much on that. There was also the issue of business dealings. Things were changing in America, where factories were now starting to become a big deal. And the northern states focused a lot of their attention on trying to bring factories up to their peak and have people working in them. And of course, they had to pay those people. And the southern states, they were more into the raw material stuff. And they had these big plantations. Many of them had big plantations where they had these slaves working, and they basically only had to pay room and board because they, quote, owned the slaves. And the North was not happy about having to pay them for these materials that they then turned into factory goods, which then could not compete overseas as well. And so there were those economic issues as well. But at the base of it all, we have to understand it was a moral issue. When the colonists came here, and I've talked about this on numerous occasions, the ones who established the colonies in the northern part of the eastern seaboard tended to be much more Christian oriented, much more Bible-centric. And so they felt that slavery was wrong because it was based on basically kidnapping these people. That was how a lot of it was happening out of Africa. But also, they were breeding them in the later stages of slavery just simply because they were African. Why should we pay for importation when we can just simply breed our own slave stock? That type of slavery has nothing to do with the slavery in the scripture. The slavery in the scripture tended to be economic slavery, as in you went into debt and you had to pay your debt off. Or your nation went into debt and you happened to be one of the ones that were tapped to pay it off by your work as a slave. And you always had the opportunity, in most cases, in the ancient world, to buy yourself out of slavery or have somebody else buy you out of slavery. And it was not so much about your ethnicity. It was about the fact that there was money involved and you were on the short end of the stick. So that changed radically with this American institution of slavery. Now the English were the ones that started it, because they were the ones in control. So the northern colonies, more Bible-based people, said, we're not going to have that garbage here. They were also the ones that tended to say, we are going to pay the natives for the property that we want to live on. And if we want more property, we need to pay them more for the property that we're living on. The southern colonies tended to be more along the lines of slaves are a part of business. They're part of keeping the bottom line low. And the Church of England tended to have control of most of those southern colonies. So even in the development of the United States in its infancy, you can see the beginnings of this problem coming, stronger, becoming stronger and stronger. Until finally, when the states are getting together to declare their independence and they're wanting to formulate their doctrines, their constitution, many of the people from the northern states in particular wanted to outlaw slavery just right out. say, nope, that's just wrong, it shouldn't be happening. But the southern states, of course, they saw that as going to be a big problem to them economically. If we were to suddenly just let go all of these people, two things are going to be a problem. What about our workforce? We're going to have to pay for them. That's going to make our goods more expensive when we're trying to trade overseas. Plus, you've got all these people that are suddenly no longer slaves. They're on their own, and they're making choices and decisions, and that might throw everything into chaos. And so they objected to that. And so the people made a choice to compromise on the issue of slavery in order to bring the United States into existence. And I think it was a bad choice, honestly. To give you my opinion on that, I think that if they had honored God, that he would have taken care of the issue for them. But instead, they made a compromise and said, we will let slavery remain intact where it's at right now, and by the year 1810, we will outlaw importation of any further slaves. And that should hopefully take care of the issue. Now, the problem with that mindset is it didn't deal with the slave breeding issue, did it? It only dealt with the idea we're not going to let importation happen anymore. And so it didn't deal with the core moral problem of slavery. The heart issue, which is we can treat people as if they're not people. And it was totally inappropriate. And go ahead, Gil.
The breeding thing.
The breeding thing.
Isn't that natural?
Yes, but basically it was the idea that any child born to a slave is itself a slave. Yeah. But that's the issue, that does not match some of the Old Testament stuff. They did not allow these people to gain their freedom either. And so they were basically treating them like animals.
Well, that's right. And then white supremacy kind of attitude.
Yes.
So both sides could abuse their slaves.
And that's why I want to bring, I'm going to read to you some of the things from the time period. Oh, they would make sure that they had lots of kids. Because, of course, the more slaves
they
were bred, the more workers
were.
Yeah, they did. They did all that. They treated their slaves very much like they treated their livestock. They took the big, strong guys and put them with big, strong women so they had, hopefully, big, strong kids. They would grow up. That's right. They didn't. And so that really is what caused a lot of the Christians, particularly in the North, to really start working for this idea of abolition. We need to abolish slavery. It's got to happen because it's wrong. And what you can do is you can take a lot of the attitudes you see about abortion today. They were reflected in the issue of abolition of slavery. People who spoke up on behalf of abolition were often talked about in very derogatory terms. There was attempts to make rules against them being able to express those things. Publishing houses that printed abolitionist material were burned because they didn't want that stuff being talked about. It was a bad situation. It really was. And so that is why you see it all coming to a climax in the 1850s as we move closer and closer to the Civil War. Yeah. Yes, it was. It was economic. And remember, in the Jewish system, which God is the one that set that up, anybody that got themselves in trouble and had to become a slave because of economics, they were freed in the seventh year of the cycle. And I believe some of them, now I have to go back and recheck it, but the 50th year also had an impact on them. But yeah, they had a system where it was guaranteed you were never going to be forced to remain in slavery, even if it was out of your own stupidity that you got yourself there. Alright, so what I want you to understand then is slavery became really the focal point of a lot of the Christians in the early 1800s, and it really started picking up steam toward the 1850s. And that's where you have people like Abraham Lincoln starting to do a lot of the political work to do away with it. I have here an excerpt from a personal letter between Abraham Lincoln and his friend Joshua Speed. Joshua Speed was in Kansas. In Kansas, bloody Kansas. A lot of problems in Kansas. And this is what he writes. "You say if Kansas fairly votes herself a free state, but as a Christian, you would rather rejoice at it. All decent slave owners talk like that, and I don't doubt their candor, but they never vote that way. Although in a private letter or conversation, you will express your preference that Kansas should be free, you would vote for no man for Congress who would say the same thing publicly. No such man can be elected from any district in a slave state. You think Stringfellow and Company ought to be hung, and yet at the next presidential election, you will vote for the exact type and representative of Stringfellow." Can you appreciate what he's talking about here? He's saying, basically, you say one thing as a Christian, and then you vote the opposite. And your excuse is, well, we never get anybody in that was of that conservative mindset. The slave breeders and slave traders are a small, odious, and detested class among you. And yet in politics, they dictate the course of all of you and are completely your masters as you are the masters of your own Negroes. You inquire where I now stand. That is a disputed point. I think I am a Whig, but others say there are no Whigs, and that I'm an abolitionist. Now, the Whig Party, George Washington was a Whig, but that was the original Whigs. This is a new group of Whigs. Whigs were basically the political group that said, we need to slow down in this expansionism that we're doing right now. This manifest destiny stuff is not appropriate. Now, you guys understand what manifest destiny was? Manifest destiny was the belief that the white people who had populated the original United States area should now basically take over the entire continent as fast as they could. And that was their God-given, not just right, but their destiny. And that anybody that got in the way of it should be displaced. Remember President Jackson? What did he do with Indians that had properties that he thought white American people should have? Thumbed his nose in the Supreme Court, basically said, okay, forget all of the treaties we made in the past. Those guys are going to be all packed up and moved. Because that property needs to belong to white people, to Americans. And the Whig Party was basically saying, whoa, this is not right. We need to just stop and develop where we're at and not get all carried away with ourselves here because we are mistreating other people. And they kind of lost steam right around this time. Because a lot of people, unfortunately, were big into this idea of expanding the United States as quickly as possible. And I got a problem with that, too. It was an empiricism, the idea of setting up an empire. And, but let's keep reading what he says. "When I was in Washington, I voted for the Wilmot Proviso as good as 40 times. And I never heard of anyone attempting to unwig me for that. I now do know more than oppose the extension of slavery. Now, the Wilmot Proviso is basically the territories that were being kind of taken over in the West should be free. Slavery should not be allowed in those new territories. And so he's basically saying, I kept voting for that, and nobody tried to say that I wasn't being a Whig when I voted against extending slavery into those territories. And he says, basically right now, I am just simply against slavery getting any farther than it currently is in the southern states where it's currently at, and in a couple of the little territories that we have. Now, I am not a know-nothing. Remember the know-nothings? That was the name for a political group. They were actually Republicans, but not the Republicans we know, okay? A pre-Republican. This is where they got their name. I know nothing but my country, my whole country, and nothing but my country. So they're very strong nationalists. They believe that America first, you know, make America great. That's what they believe, okay? And they were the ones that were against immigration, particularly non-Protestant immigration. But they were also against slavery, and they were against the movement of the Indian tribes. And so, but he says, this is again Lincoln when he was serving for Illinois in the Congress. I am not a know-nothing. That is certain. How could I be? How can anyone who abhors the oppression of Negroes be in favor or degrading classes of white people? Our progress in degeneracy appears to me to be very rapid. As a nation, we began by declaring that, quote, all men are created equal, unquote. We now practically read it as, quote, all men are created equal except Negroes, end quote. When the know-nothings get control, it will read, quote, all men are created equal except Negroes and foreigners and Catholics, end quote. And, well, yeah, of course, that wasn't part of his quote. When it comes to this, I should prefer immigrating to some country where they make no pretense of loving liberty, to Russia, for instance, where despotism can be taken pure and without the base alloy of hypocrisy. So he was quite upset in this letter with his friend because he thought his friend was being hypocritical by not voting his conscience. And of course, that is often a problem with people who do not vote their conscience. So the following year after that letter was written, 1856, in November, that was a very heated election year. And it was mainly centered on whether or not slavery should be expanded into Kansas and Nebraska through the Act of 1854, whether or not that really should be the progress of the nation. And of course, the American Party was very much against all of that because they wanted it. They wanted all to be centered on those that were already Americans, and they didn't want other people coming into the country that were not like the Americans that were already here. Read by that, most of the Protestants. Remember, about 95% of the population after the Revolutionary War was Protestant. And so they wanted to fight against that. But the know-nothings could not overcome a split amongst themselves about slavery. Because some of them thought that the Southerners should have their right to have slaves left intact. And others, of course, disagreed with that. So everybody's splitting up. Everybody's starting to choose a side. 1857, we mentioned this last week, that's when the Supreme Court decided by a 7-2 majority that in the case of Dred Scott, an African could not be counted as a citizen underneath the Constitution. That just because Dred Scott was with his master in the northern states That did not free him, because he could not be counted as a citizen with protections underneath the Constitution. And the decision, actually, when we departed that, said that Africans could never truly be citizens. Which is weird, because in the northern states, there were an awful lot of free voting Negro citizens. And that's probably one of the reasons that you get the two dissenters from this majority of things. Because they saw this was not appropriate. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
In England, when we were talking in Parliament about the slavery, I can't remember what the date was.
Yeah, that's really weird, because England had already resolved this issue 20 years earlier. If we had remained part of the English Commonwealth, slavery would have been done in 1830. Like Canada, because Canada was part of the Commonwealth. But we had split off, and that was good in a lot of respects, but it kept one of the stupid things that the English Commonwealth had put into place earlier in its existence. And like I said, we compromised on it in, you know, the 1789, when we adopted our Constitution. And it set the stage for us going down a totally different path than what England did. England actually resolved their slavery issue without bloodshed. It was an act of parliament by England. But that was not the way it would be in the United States. And unfortunately, it set an attitude that still reverberates to this day. 1859, something was going on in England that unfortunately still causes trouble today. That's when Charles Darwin wrote his On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. And his material was used throughout the years after it was written to uphold this idea that Africans are lower on the scale of life than white people. Because there are certain races that are just better than others. Now, let's talk biology here for a moment. Race is an inappropriate term to be used. Race, in its most technical sense, is applied to the human race, Homo sapiens sapiens. In other words, those that have been created in the image of God from a Christian perspective. We are all part of the one race. Book of Acts talks about the fact that God made from one blood all people on the face of the earth. That is the biblical stance. Every human being is equal. And that's the whole point behind the Declaration of Independence. But in evolutionary science, they try to use the term race when they actually mean ethnicity. And ethnicity is only like a 1/10 of 1% variance within the human race. So every last one of us sitting in here today, our ethnicity, the gene code that we have, the thing that makes us distinguished from all other peoples on the face of the earth, the difference is only 1/10 of 1% of our genes. But it affects visual things, like the color of your eyes, how much melanin is in your skin, so the color of your skin, color of your hair, the shape of your hair, the shape of the fat folds underneath your eyes. Okay? Because that slight difference makes visual differences, that's where the problem has arisen. Is because we can see the differences. And people want to say that they are separate races when they are not. They're just separate gene presentations. I like to say it this way. God loves variety. And we ought to love it too, instead of dividing up over it. Because that is a huge, huge problem. There are still people today that will try to tell you that there is a created difference between white people and everybody else. They are wrong genetically, and they are wrong biblically. And they need to be called the target.
Don't you know that in the Middle East, that we were more the color of the world?
Well, yes. And see, that's where the white supremacists have a really big deviation, is that they're actually on the outside of the people group that was at the center of the gene pool, which have a darker skin than, you know, probably most of us here today, right? And the Jewish people for sure darker skin than most of us. Anyway, let's get back to more of this, because I want to read some more quotes to you. You know that in 1860, Lincoln is elected, and things fall apart. Just like they threatened, the southern states say, you know, said, if Lincoln becomes president and he pushes this idea of getting rid of slavery, we're out of here. We're going to secede. President Lincoln probably overreacted, in my opinion, to how he tried to deal with that. Because he basically said, you are not allowed to secede. You don't have the right as a state to pull out of this union. And we will force you by arms to stay in the union. And that really is probably what set the war off, is his declaration that you don't have the right to pull out. Both sides thought that it would be over quick. The North thought that they could, you know, get a whole bunch of volunteers, and they'd go down there and win a few real quick battles, and the southern states would say, okay, all right, fine. It's a fait accompli. We can't secede, so we'll just have to deal with this legislatively on the issue of slavery. The South thought that they'd be able to deal with the invaders from the North real fast, because they had lots of material, and that they'd be able to then establish themselves as their own independent country. They even had a constitution drawn up. And so both sides thought that it would be over in a matter of months in their favor. And of course, you know, that is not the way it happened. On March the 11th of 1861, the Confederate States of America adopted their constitution. In about a week later, the vice president gave his cornerstone speech for the establishment of the Confederacy. I want you to listen to these excerpts from it. The new Constitution has put at rest forever all the agitating questions relating to our peculiar institution, African slavery, as it exists among us. The proper status of the Negro in our formal civilization. Our new government is founded upon exactly the opposite idea. Its foundations are laid, its cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man. That slavery subordination to the superior race is his natural and normal condition. This, our new government, is the first in the history of the world based upon this great physical, philosophical, and moral truth. I want you to understand that he is actually referencing some of the ideals put forward by Darwin and others, that certain races are farther down the evolutionary scale than others. And when they say races, they mean ethnic groups. And he's basically asserting, we, the Confederacy, are establishing the first ever country to acknowledge that reality.
We still
lay
out
the
plaster.
We do. Yeah. Those are economic.
We want to use, but see, that's where we want to justify what we say by the words we use versus saying, you know, it's DNA, it's race, it's class, it's ethics, whatever. In the end, it's all wash. All those words end up being equal. And I want to separate my group from your group, but I just want to use this phrase today to separate this phrase tomorrow to separate it.
Yeah. Lee, I think what you're bringing out is the fact that everybody bears responsibility for keeping the student thing going. The American unique experience relating to this and how it was handled poorly. All the way around. Still bears a lot of fruit in our country today. Yeah.
We talk about everybody wants to bring pride on gun laws. There is no need for gun laws. Gun laws are a ridiculous idea. We need laws that are enforced about stupid people doing stupid things. Who does that? You know, we talk about it at lunch sometimes, working off it. You know, I can lay a gun on every table in this cafeteria when I walk in the morning. By the end of the day, not one of those guns will kill anybody. Unless one stupid person comes in there,
right?
And takes us one.
It's person.
Yeah. People are like difficult.
I think one of the things we've got to acknowledge too, especially since we are Christians, we're dealing with this from a Christian viewpoint, is that none of these things will be resolved until people's hearts are changed. The problem is sin. And sin is about selfishness. And many of these things relate on people going, I don't care. I want what I want, and I'm going to give it. And we have to convince people that they need to repent of that. They got to humble themselves under the hand of God and love Him with everything and love the people around them with everything. And acknowledge there is no distinction in the eyes of God between me and everybody else other than this. As a Christian, I am saved and sanctified by the blood of Jesus Christ. And everybody that does not fall into that category is in the potential of being into that category. Regardless of what they look like on the outside. And my goal ought to be to try to help them cross that line where they are. And that is what Christians have got to get their heads around. And you've got to be totally colorblind. You've got to be totally economic-minded. We've got to look at people not at external things, but at the heart. I'm going to read some more from this guy. This guy is expressing the beginnings of the KKK aspect and white supremacy. Many governments have been founded upon the principle of subordination and serfdom of certain classes of the same race. Such were and are in violation of the laws of nature. So when white people put into slavery white people, he says that's in violation of the laws of nature. Our system commits no such violation of nature's laws. With us, all the white people, however high or low, rich or poor, are equal in the eyes of the law. Not so with the Negro. Subordination is his place. He by nature, or by the curse against Canaan, is fitted for that condition which he occupies in our system. Now that is a blasphemous use of Scripture. Because the curse against Canaan was again, it was a prophecy, not so much a curse. It was a prophecy that the Canaanites would eventually find themselves serving the Jewish people. And that happened because of the Gibeonite thing, and I don't want to go into all that. So it was fulfilled in that respect. Later, many of those people who had been slaves became a free portion of the Israeli nation. You might not know that. They married into it and became part of it and were saved. But anyway, he's making a bad Bible excuse for slavery.
That was pretty confusing. Even parts of my grandmother would say something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and when I would speak, even talking to people,
mm-hmm.
it was like, I thought how good.
Right. Well, see, what they did was they twisted it anyway, because the curse, or the prophecy actually, was about Canaan, but they would then turn around and say, you see, this is the curse against Ham, and all black people belong to the Hamite group. That is not what it said. And guess what? There are a lot more Hamites than just the African peoples. There were Hamites in Turkey. So, they are not applying this appropriately in any way, shape, or form. But you know what people do. When they have a pet sin, they will use every excuse in the book, I'm talking about the Bible there, in order to allow themselves to continue that sin. I mean, look at homosexuality today. Homosexuality is widely accepted in many liberal churches, and they make excuse after excuse after excuse why it should be accepted. These guys at this time did the same thing. And they need to be condemned for it. It's not appropriate. The architect in the construction of buildings lays the foundation with the proper material, the granite. Then comes the brick or the marble. The substratum of our society is made of the material fitted by nature for it. And by experience, we know that it is best, not only for the superior, but for the inferior race, that it should be so. It is indeed in conformity with the ordinances of our Creator. It is not for us to inquire into the wisdom of His ordinances or to question them. For His own purposes, He has made one race to differ from another, as He has made one star to differ from another star of glory. This is the Vice President of the Confederate States of America. In the year that it started. Darwin's book has been out for a few years by the time that this happened. But even remember, Darwin's book was just the printed reality of what was already being talked about in a lot of circles. Is that the lighter skinned races were superior to the dark skinned. And so he's just basically saying God created us that way, and God created these guys to be our slaves and us to be their masters. And we ought to not fight God on that. Did you hear that in there basically?
Yeah.
Who are we to call in the wisdom of God on this issue? It's really, really sad, isn't it? One last quote from you. Thousands of people who begin to understand these truths are yet completely out of the shell. So they haven't expressed it. They believe it inside, but they're not letting it out. They do not see them in their length and breadth. We hear much of the civilization and Christianization of the barbarous tribes of Africa. In my judgment, those ends will never be attained, but by first teaching them the lesson taught to Adam, that in the sweat of his brow he should eat his bread, and teaching them to work and feed and clothe themselves. So his thought on missionary work in Africa was basically, we need to quit putting so much effort into that and just teach them to take care of themselves so that they can be our slaves. And you know, in some places in the South, it was illegal to Christianize your slaves. It was very popular for a while there at the very beginning of American history to have like church service with your slaves on your plantation and teach them how to read and write and learn the Bible and, you know, try to help them become Christians. But you see, if you start acknowledging that, it kicks this argument in the head.
Yeah.
And so they started saying, you can't do that. You got to quit it. Because you're treating them like they're equal to us. They're not. Here's an 1862 September, written private meditation by Lincoln. So he didn't speak this out loud, it was in his own private journal. The will of God prevails. In great contests, each party claims to act in accordance with the will of God. Both may be, and one must be, wrong. God cannot be for and against the same thing at the same time. In the present civil war, it is quite possible that God's purpose is something different from the purpose of either party. And yet, the human instrumentalities working just as they do are the best adaptation to effect his purpose. I am almost ready to say that this is probably true, that God wills this contest and wills that it shall not end yet. By his mere great power on the minds of the now contestants, he would have either saved or destroyed the Union without a human contest. And yet the contest began, and having begun, he could give the final victory to either side any day. Yet the contest prevails. So he wrote that 2 years into the Civil War, as president, seeing these reports of how many people have been killed. And he basically starts questioning, is God on either side? Because certainly God could have stopped it at any moment. You're familiar with the Gettysburg Address. We are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and dedicated can long endure. And we're met on a great battlefield of that war. We've come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who have gave their lives that that nation might live. And it's all together fitting the proper nation. Last part. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to here be dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolved that these dead shall have not died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people shall not perish from the earth. So that's 1863. Somewhere in that area, it would appear that Lincoln actually had a conversion from a liberal form of Christianity to a much more sincere personal relationship. And he began to see that this was really not about economics. It was about the fact that slavery should never have been compromised on in the first place. And that is why his second inaugural address, I think, reads the way it reads. This is in 1865. In the preamble to it, he basically talks about how, 4 years ago when we started this, we had a hope we'd be able to resolve the issue without war, but people were already undermining that effort at the time of the inauguration. So, here is the last section. 1/8 of the whole population were colored slaves, not distributed generally over the Union, but localized in the southern part of it. These slaves constituted a peculiar and powerful interest. All knew that this interest was somehow the cause of the war. To strengthen, perpetuate, and extend this interest was the object for which the insurgents would rend the Union even by war, while the government claimed no right to do more than to restrict the territorial enlargement of them. And that's probably a nice, precise description of the two sides. The South felt that they should be able to help in the establishment of slave states farther to the West. And the North felt that, no, we should stop slavery where it's already at and leave it alone. Take care of it, somehow later. And that was kind of the positions of the two sides when everything started. Neither party expected for the war, or for the war, the magnitude or the duration which it already attained. Neither anticipated that the cause of the conflict might cease with, or even before the conflict itself should cease. Each looked for an easier triumph and a result less fundamental and astounding. Both read the same Bible, pray to the same God, each invokes his aid against the other. It may seem strange that any man should dare to ask a just God's assistance in wringing their bread from the sweat of other men's faces. But let us not judge. Let us judge not that we not be judged. The prayers of both cannot be answered. That of neither has been answered fully. The Almighty has his own purposes. Quote, woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to the man by whom the offense cometh. End quote. Where's that from? Yet you don't have to give me a specific place within the book, but where's it from? No, it's not Deuteronomy, but it is the Bible. It's actually the words of Jesus. And it's Matthew chapter 18. If we should suppose that African slavery is one of those offenses which, in the providence of God, must needs come, but which, having continued through his appointed time, he now wills to remove, and that he gives to both North and South this terrible war as the woe due to those by whom the offense comes, shall we discern therein any departure from those divine attributes which the believers in the living God always ascribe to him? Yeah. He is speaking from a Calvinistic viewpoint. There's no doubt about that. But he's basically saying, we're paying the just penalty for letting slavery ever get a foothold in this country. People are dying by the hundreds of thousands because we tried to compromise. I think that is the lesson that really does need to be taken out of the Civil War. Is that we can't let compromises happen ever again. Do you know what you can compromise on? Things that don't matter. Where should we eat lunch today? Doesn't matter, so let's compromise. You can't compromise on things that matter. And they compromised on slavery. And they and we paid the bill for it. What was the final total, you know, of deaths? 600,000 plus died. And that was not just simply the soldiers. There were a lot of civilians that died.
I've always wondered, the people that actually fought on the South Side were poor farmers.
Many of them, yes.
They had no interest at all in slavery.
Yes. And when you read some of the stuff, you find out that they didn't understand why. All they understood was they were being invaded. And they're being asked to defend their country. Now, you will read modern writers will point out, though, that those people were benefiting economically from the slave trade. I think that could be debated a little bit because a lot of those guys were poor little homesteaders that were in competition with some of the bigger plantations. They would have probably been better off without the plantations.
They were just the ones that were brought up.
Yeah, they were. They were. So, there were no good actors in this, other than, I think, the abolitionists in the North who were trying their best to say, let's not keep this stupidity going. We made mistakes in the past, let's not make it worse by keeping it going. I think they were the only actors who probably had the right attitude. And unfortunately, everybody didn't go. Let me read the rest of what he has to say here. Fondly do we hope, fervently do we pray, that this mighty scourge of war may speedily pass away. Yet if God wills that it continue until all the wealth piled up by the bondsman's 250 years of unrequited toil should be sunk, and until every drop of blood drawn with the lash should be paid by another drawn with the sword. As it has been said 3,000 years ago, so still it must be said, quote, the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether, end quote. With malice toward none, with charity toward all, with firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work of your aid, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and of all nations. And of course, the Civil War ended the following year, 65. General Lee surrendered at Appomattox, and a few days later, President Lincoln was shot as somebody who was not happy that the war was over. And apparently, there's a conspiracy involved in that. He was the only target that day. But what happens next is the Northerners try to change everything to match a slave-free nation. But what happens a lot of times when people with authority get in charge of them?
Power, power, power.
And so you've got the radical Republican Reconstructionists that go in, and they start doing all sorts of things that are very punishing and vicious and mean and punitive to the South. And what happens when a person feels that they're being mistreated even in the resolution of something? They react. And so you get the Ku Klux Klan gets started. Thankfully, the 14th Amendment basically reversed the Dred Scott decision, which did away with this idea that just because of your skin color, you can't be a citizen. The 15th Amendment was put in place to close some voting loopholes in the South, because one of the things they were doing was trying to put little loopholes in place to keep slaves, ex-slaves, from voting. But when the radical Republicans lost control of this Reconstruction, what ends up is the South starts establishing segregation. They basically say, fine, we can't have slaves, but we still have this attitude that we believe that the races are distinct, and we will be separately equal. And guess what that sets the problem up for? 50s and 60s. Because eventually people got to start going, wait a second, that's wrong. That was not what this was supposed to be taken care of. And so we are still bearing the bad fruit of bad choices all along in this whole process. And the only resolution to it is for us as Christians to adopt a biblical approach of absolute equal treatment of everyone. And understand it has nothing to do with one, quote, race being better than another in the eyes of God. Any last comments or questions? Yeah?
I spent a day in Pittsburgh about 2 years ago. And when I left, I was extremely mad.
Because of
all the deaths and the
war. Yeah. Yeah. See, all of those deaths could have been avoided. I think all of those deaths could have been avoided if Christians had stood up at the Constitutional Convention and said, I don't care what you're saying about the economics of this. It's wrong. It can't be allowed to continue. And God will sort it out if we'll just stand up for what's right. I believe that we're going to totally do it. And we've got the example of 1830 England. That's basically what the abolitionists did in England. They kept working with their government, saying, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. It's got to be stopped. And they finally stopped it.
But what happened then is, like, when regulation for the war for our country, this country, mm-hmm. that I love, and it's 230 years old, but 21 years only of the day.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly. Four.
Yeah. And the biggest war that could have been avoided of all was the Civil War. It could have been avoided by not compromising the other world.
And that's the trouble with Christians. You don't stand up and say, compromise.
And that is exactly the lesson that I think Bible-believing Christians have to take from this. Is when they are being asked, compromise. Their response has to be, I can't compromise on things that are important. I'll compromise with you on the color of a carpet. I'll compromise with you on the name of a bill. But I won't compromise with you on moral things. And we've got to be stronger about that. Too many things have got... the whole abortion bill happened because of compromises. Okay? Homosexuality being widely accepted happened because of compromises along the route. And we've got to learn our lessons from this. Alright, well, we're out of time. Next week, we're going to talk about how the post-Civil War started moving into some other areas related to church work, particularly within the Restoration movement, because that's, I think, of interest to this congregation.